Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
That's right, Dr. Dobson. And friend, thanks to generous listeners like you, Family Talk can reach more and more listeners with practical help and encouragement. To support Family Talk with your best gift, go online to drjamesdobson.org or call 877-732-6825.
Today on Family Talk.
The United States was founded on the idea of freedom. It's been echoed through our pledge to this republic for all of our history, and it provides liberty and justice for all. Sadly, though, today's freedoms that our founding fathers fought for are being infringed upon in the name of secularism and quote-unquote tolerance, which is really very intolerant when you think about it. You're listening to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh, and today you're going to hear about two religious freedom cases that have been argued in the Supreme Court and how they impact our daily lives. Discussing these issues with Dr. Dobson is Dr. Michael Ferris, president of the Alliance Defending Freedom, a legal advocacy group that focuses on these religious liberty cases. Also joining the conversation is Jenna Ellis, an allied attorney with ADF who specializes in constitutional law. Let's listen now to their informative and educating conversation on this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
We're going to talk today about two Supreme Court cases that could have major implications for the religious community, especially those of us who are committed to Jesus Christ, because these cases will have implications for the conservatives across the country, especially those that are concerned about a drift toward tyranny in this country. And I can tell you a lot of us are watching with bated breath to see what the Supreme Court is going to do. Mike, my friend, thank you for joining us today.
Dr. Dobson, it is always a pleasure to be with you. It's just an honor.
And did I overstate the case for concern about what the Supreme Court is about to do?
No, both of these cases really are going to determine, I would say it is, whether America is a free nation anymore or not. If the government can tell you how you must speak to please political correctness, we don't really live in a free country anymore. There are different applications of the free speech principle, but the one coming from Colorado is the application of artistic speech in the cake design context. And the California case that I just argued a few weeks ago in the Supreme Court is whether the pro-abortion community can force pro-life pregnancy centers to deliver what amounts to ads for abortion services in the lobby of their facilities, which is just anathema to godly people everywhere.
So this has implications for the First Amendment.
Indeed. If the government can tell people to give a message they don't want to give, it's the same or perhaps even worse than forcing someone to be silent. So either side of the First Amendment violation implicates the entirety of the amendment.
The other guest with us today is Jenna Ellis. Jenna, it's so good to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a privilege to be with you and Dr. Ferris today.
And you also are a specialist in constitutional law. Is that correct?
I am, yes. And actually, Dr. Ferris was my first constitutional law professor in high school.
It's also my understanding that he wrote an endorsement or a foreword for your book.
He did indeed.
And the title of the book?
Is The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution, and it's essentially the defense of how our nation was founded upon Christian legal principles, and a defense not just of the Founding Fathers and their faith, but rather from a legal perspective, how we can argue these types of cases like Masterpiece, like NIFLA, and recognize to the greater community what principles are at stake.
Tell us what NIFLA is again.
The National Institute for Family and Life Advocates, which is the case that Dr. Ferris just finished arguing on March 20th in the Supreme Court.
And that first case is the Masterpiece Cake Shop.
Yes, and that originated with Jack Phillips, actually, out of Colorado, here just a little bit down the road in Lakewood. And that case was very critical to those of us in Colorado specifically. And as Dr. Ferris pointed out, that the government has no authority to compel you or me to promote messages or to use our creative skills and talents to participate in an event like a same-sex wedding that violates our sincerely held beliefs. That case is going to be foundationally critical to religious liberty moving forward.
Mike, would you take us back? I guess that goes back to 2012 when this case first hit the courts. What's the history of it?
The history here is that Jack Phillips has a bakery in the Denver area where he serves all kinds of people and will serve gay people, everybody. But he won't deliver cakes with particular messages that violate his faith. He doesn't do Halloween cakes. He doesn't do gambling cakes. He doesn't do other things that violate his particular faith. And he won't do same-sex wedding cakes. So he offered to sell these two men who came into his store anything they want that was pre-made in the store, muffins, whatever they wanted to buy as individuals. But he would not use his artistic talents to design a same-sex wedding cake. And from there, they complained to the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. The commission held that he was in violation of the civil rights of these two men. That case was appealed through the Colorado court system. Eventually, the Colorado Court of Appeals decided against Jack Phillips. The state Supreme Court refused to hear the case, and we petitioned the U.S. Supreme Court to take the case, and it was argued by my colleague Kristen Wagner in December.
Did it shock you that such a case with so little basis to it or foundation to it has gotten all the way to the Supreme Court?
No, not really, because there's a number of cases like this. We also represent Baronelle Stutzman from Washington State. And her case went from the Washington State Supreme Court and is pending before the U.S. Supreme Court as well. She runs a flower shop in my hometown of the Tri-Cities, Washington. And she refused to serve a couple that she'd served in other capacities for years, but didn't express any willingness. In fact, she said she would not do the wedding flowers for this particular couple. And she thought things were fine between them. But nonetheless, they filed a similar complaint with the state, and that case worked through the state system of Washington State. And that's pending as well. There are other cases that are similar. This is an issue that's ripe for decision, and we're very grateful that the Supreme Court took it.
What's your take on it, Jenna? How did we get to this moment?
That's a wonderful question. And the history of how the left has been targeting religious liberty for the past 50 to 60 years, this really all goes back in my mind to the sexual revolution. And in 1965, there was a case called Griswold versus Connecticut. And that case unfortunately stood for the proposition that the justices can read into the Constitution any right that they wish to derive, which includes, as further jurisprudence has been handed down, any right such as same-sex protection of marriage, which the left has termed marriage equality. And that includes the contraceptive cases. That includes Roe versus Wade in 1973, this so-called right to abortion. So we've seen the Supreme Court look to the Constitution as being the legal document that grants us our rights, rather than understanding that the Constitution and our government is designed to preserve and protect the rights that are endowed by our Creator.
It turns it on its ear, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. What do you think the implications are for the mom, we'll say, out there with three kids and she is doing her best to raise them properly, or a husband who has his own business, he's got his mind on many things? Why should they care about the outcome of this case?
Because if it can happen to Jack Phillips, it can happen to anyone. And if a person does not, who owns a small business, who has parental rights to protect the health, safety, welfare, and upraising of their children, any of these types of decisions that go specifically to fundamental rights that our government is designed to preserve and protect, if our government is compelling a Christian individual to participate in events or to speak messages that they fundamentally disagree with, that can happen to you or me.
So in a sense, Mike, maybe in the larger sense, that this is not an isolated situation.
It's not isolated at all. The good news is I think they may have gone too far. I feel very hopeful that the Supreme Court's going to get this one right. And the legacy that Justice Kennedy, if I read him correctly in oral argument, will leave is will be not so good in some areas from my perspective, but on free speech, he's been really good. And so I hope he continues that streak here, and we'll just have to wait and see. He asked very good questions and was very upset with some of the things that Colorado was advancing, particularly their religious bigotry of one of the judges in the administrative tribunal. He set himself in the argument. Tolerance needs to be a two-way street, and I don't see the state of Colorado tolerating Jack Phillips very much here. And so that was a very encouraging statement by Justice Kennedy in that particular situation.
Well, you may have just answered this question, but let me ask it another way. How did you feel when you came out of there?
This case, I was the backup for Kristen Wagner, who's my lead counsel. She argued the case, but I was assisting her. I felt like Kristen did a great job, and I think we won. But, you know, I don't know that for sure. There's some cases you walk out and you know for sure that you've won. Sometimes you think you've lost. But this one, you know, I feel very good about it. I think we got a really good chance of getting 5, maybe 6 votes from the Supreme Court, maybe 7.
Have you argued before the Supreme Court before?
Yes. On March 20th, I argued my second case before the Supreme Court. The first one was 32 years earlier, a religious freedom case I argued out of the state of Washington. On the issue of whether or not a young man could use his vocational rehabilitation money to go to Bible college. And so I won that case 9-0, and I'm hoping that the case that I just argued in March will turn out equally well.
You were on the front lines of the fight for homeschools and the rights of parents to teach their own children. In fact, you and I worked together on that one. We took on the entire Congress at one point and almost smoked the switchboard. I'm sure you remember that situation.
Oh, yes, very much. H.R. 6 in the early 1990s is one of the my favorite memories, but Congress still smarts over it. And Jim, we didn't almost smoke the switchboards. We buried it. In fact, the Washington, D.C. switchboards were shut down at times, not just the Congress. And so Newt Gingrich later told me that we had delivered 3 million calls inside of 8 days. And what started off as a disaster for the right to homeschool ended up being a victory, a vote of 422-1. And your program and friendship in that was a key part of delivering millions of those calls.
And the one congressman who had written and proposed the bill is the one vote that bill got.
Dick Armey was our hero on that occasion. But we have to remember that Bill Clinton was president and the Democrats controlled both houses of Congress. But when people spoke up and said the right thing, we still won. And so it really demonstrates the power of the people when given the information that you've brought them so faithfully over the years.
Well, that was a day when people were much more tuned in to the issues they care about, to the moral issues, to righteousness, and to the family. And I wish it were still that way. People are much less likely to fight these battles, and that becomes very lonely for people like us who are trying to explain why this is important.
Well, God blesses faithfulness, and there will arise the day when our voices will have that kind of resonance that we saw on that particular occasion. But I believe that whether it's in many or few, God can still prevail, and we just have to be faithful and do our part.
Well, we want to talk about two cases here. This is the first one. Jenna, why don't you explain what the second one is?
Yes, and so the National Institute for Family and Life Advocates is actually the case that Mike Ferris did present the oral arguments in front of March 20th. And this concerns a California Assembly bill, which in 2015 is the so-called Reproductive Fact Act. And this law mandated that medical pro-life pregnancy centers provide written or digital information to their patients, such as a sign in the waiting room or other materials girls on how to obtain a state-funded abortion.
Yeah, just to make sure that our listeners understand what you just said, I use the word breathless about the first case, but this one really does grab me. This is in the state of California, which does the craziest things. The legislature there is absolutely out of control, and they're determined to take these radical, far leftist concepts and shove them down the throats of people who also have constitutional rights, but you'd never know it out there. I want you to say that one more time. What was it that this state legislature in California did to pro-life, constitutionally protected Americans?
This law attempted to compel a pro-life pregnancy center to essentially advertise for abortion. And it's a California law that went into effect in 2016 that requires licensed medical centers that offer free pro-life help to pregnant women to post a disclosure saying that California provides free or low-cost abortion and contraceptive services. Pro-life pregnancy centers inform women of all their options. They support the First Amendment. Information about abortion is also already widely available. This is about the government using its power to force pro-life pregnancy centers to provide free advertising for abortions. No one should be forced to provide free advertising for the abortion industry, and least of all pro-life pregnancy centers where it conflicts with their sincerely held religious beliefs. So it's very similar.
And they have to do that. What happens if they don't?
Then if they're not in compliance, and Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, there is a penalty that is it per day?
It's per instance. It's $500 the first time and $1,000 every time after that. So every person that walks in the door, you see $1,000 of a fine if you don't have the sign on your wall.
So this could be multiple instances in a given day if they're out of
compliance. That would close them down because they don't have much money anyway.
And that's really the intent of a lot of these laws. And we see that it's so important on the state level what happens in these cases, because as this one got to the Supreme Court, and that will have far-reaching implications nationally. For those of us here in Colorado, Mike Ferris in Washington, D.C., for anyone in any state around the country, it's incredibly important what's happening in the California legislature, what's happening in Colorado, what's happening anywhere, because these cases ultimately will end up and have ended up in the Supreme Court.
Mike, is this as egregious as it sounds like it is to us laymen?
It is. And it's not surprising, as you well said, that the California legislature would pass such a thing. And it's not terribly surprising, as you alluded to earlier, that the Ninth Circuit upheld the law. But the Supreme Court took review of the case, and the oral argument was exciting, and it went very, very well. And the legal commentators across the board expressed that the justices were very skeptical of the legitimacy of this law. Justice Kagan asked very hard questions of California. Justice Sotomayor expressed some concerns that the law may have gone too far. And even Justice Ginsburg expressed some concerns as well as the, some of the more conservative justices were openly skeptical of the law. And so I thought the hearing was terrific. I read it as a very good day.
How soon are those decisions going to be handed down?
Well, they both have to be decided before June 30th. And I would think the masterpiece, the cake shop case, is so controversial, it'll probably be toward the end of June. And the other one, the NIFLA pro-life case, was one of the latest cases argued in the term. And so it'll probably be mid-June as well. So they could come down the same day, theoretically. And I'm hopeful we'll have two great victories from the Supreme Court. But we need to realize one thing. The other side in both of these cases will not give it up. Just like in the Boy Scouts case, the Boy Scouts won the freedom to do the right thing relative to having gay scoutmasters. But the other side pummeled the Boy Scouts until they relented. And we should not believe that if we win in the Supreme Court, this is all going to go away. They will come after people like you and me and try to pummel us to death until we relent on these issues.
Well, at least, I'm going to have to be really careful with what I'm about to say, and I may even fumble to try to say it because I don't want to politicize, our program or the things that you guys are doing. by overstating it, but if the last election had gone the other way in terms of the presidency of the United States and the makeup of the Supreme Court had headed in a even more liberal direction, we would have been in a world of hurt on a lot of these issues, wouldn't we?
Yes, we would. And in fact, that was one of the interesting things about procedurally the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, because that was pending through a number of reviews in the Supreme Court before there were enough justices that went ahead and granted review of that case. And had there been a different justice besides Justice Neil Gorsuch appointed by our current president, that case may never have come before the Supreme Court.
And there will be many others.
There will. And that's why it's so incredibly important that we as Christians, as conservatives, remain vigilant, are educated on these issues, participate in our state and local government, participate and understand the activities of organizations like Alliance Defending Freedom, and continue to make sure that we have continued victories in the state and local level and the Supreme Court.
Mike, let me take you to 30,000 feet, okay, and look over the nation and give us kind of an overview of where this country seems to be headed. Are you extremely concerned or are you hopeful, and especially with regard to our children and what's happening in the public schools?
Well, it's both. The areas of concern are that the left doesn't seem content to just disagree with us on policy issues anymore, and try to do their best in the election process and do their best in various kinds of legislative issues and so on. They're trying to absolutely shut down anybody from speaking who disagrees with them. They're trying to cut off financial services, insurance services, banking services. Anybody that disagrees with them gets labeled with a hate group label, and they are doing their best to leverage corporate America to silence and run out of town anybody that disagrees with them. America used to be based on the principle, I may disagree with everything you say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it. The left has given that up entirely. They're trying to drown us out. On the other side, there's a faithful remnant that understands these issues and is standing up and is speaking up. Homeschoolers are among those, but there are others as well that you have been a faithful leader of that voice and that movement. And we need to understand that if we don't stand up for freedom, then freedom isn't going to last another generation. With the number of kids and grandkids that I have, I am highly invested, as are you, Dr. Dobson, in making sure that the next generation has the same level or even greater freedoms than we experience. And what we do in the next 10 to 15 years is going to be the real decision about the long-range trajectory of the United States. It may be faster than that. It may be 2 or 3 years, frankly, not 10 to 15.
Well, this is what concerns me. And this comes down to my area of greatest interest, and it has to do with the next generation, with children, with parents trying to raise their own children in the fear and admonition of the Lord. And what I'm seeing is a bifurcation within Christendom, so that where you used to have, if not a unanimity of thought on these great moral issues, there was certainly a preponderance of that view within the Christian communities. Now, Christians are starting to argue over these issues. And a lot of people are coming down on what I would consider to be a very dangerous side. Do you see that? Are you worried about that?
I see it, and it does concern me. The next generation of Christians are the real battleground. Jenna is really a marvelous exception to that, because she's of that generation. She's young enough to be one of my kids. We see so many young people that have been influenced by the media, by public education, and other things, that they've stopped believing some of the basic Christian principles about freedom, about righteousness, about morality. Pro-life views are doing pretty well, but if you go outside of that, there's so much dissent among Christians on these issues. We've confused ourselves, and we've not taken a bold stand. And part of it is our pastors need to be bold and informed and preaching the whole counsel of the Word of God.
Jenna, what's the name of your book?
Thank you. It's called The Legal Basis for a Moral Constitution.
Let us know when we find out what the Supreme Court has done on these two issues and any others. Dr. Ferris, thank you for being with us. Jenna, thank you for you coming and being with us, coming down the it's not called a freeway here. What is it, the expressway? Anyway, it's easy to get here. We'll have you back.
Thank you.
I love you both.
We love
you. Thank
you
so much.
Thank you for listening to today's broadcast here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. If you'd like to learn more about the Alliance Defending Freedom or the various cases they're involved with right now, go to our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. That's drjamesdobson.org, and then click onto today's broadcast page. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening today. Be sure to join us again tomorrow as we end the week with a great discussion Dr. Dobson had with author and columnist Rebecca Hagland on the topic of equipping parents to fight the culture war. That's next time right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.